Coming up on today's program, Indigenous Affairs, A Poet's Passing, and Families Getting Outside. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISA Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. Up first in our program, as the United States celebrates its 250th anniversary, visits to historic sites like the Liberty Bell or President George Washington's home are on many people's lists. For the past week, the focus has been different for a group of American Indians. They've been traveling to historic sites in states from where their ancestors were forcibly removed. WISO's Indigenous Affairs reporter, Adriana Martinez-Smiley, reports.
The Eastern Shawnee Tribe of Oklahoma are descendants of the Shawnee people who lived in Ohio. The tribe organizes a trip to go back there every couple of years. This time, it was a caravan of 52 Eastern Shawnee citizens traveling by bus and car nearly 700 miles from their tribal headquarters in Wyandotte, Oklahoma. One of their first stops on a sunny 80-degree morning was at the Great Council State Park, where they were greeted by a tour guide, Steve Cuff.
Welcome back.
It's good to be back.
Good.
This area was originally called Old Chillicothe, one of the largest known 18th century Shawnee villages in the state. Eastern Shawnee Chief Glenna Wallace initiated these trips shortly after she was elected in 2006. She says Ohio is home.
So while we can document having been in 27 different states, it was here in Ohio when we were forcibly removed in 1832.
Amber Graham says she is a descendant of Chief Blackfish, one of the Shawnee leaders of the Chillicothe Band. It was her first time visiting the area.
I like to see where they walked, what they did, and it feels like you can feel a little bit of their presence and what they've been through, and it can get a little emotional.
Graham and her sister, Ashley Avilis, were looking forward to seeing Serpent Mound. It's a 1,300-foot-long earthen mound shaped like a serpent. The National Historic Landmark was built by Native Americans more than 2,000 years ago. The sisters had only seen it in photos. Avilis says she had been to Ohio once before with her grandmother some 20 years ago.
I loved going on it with my grandma, but I didn't get to appreciate at that age what I'm actually experiencing, how to tie it back to our ancestors.
Another stop on the tour was the Hopewell Ceremonial Earthworks, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It was a proud moment for some, since Shawnee people are likely descendants of the builders of the earthen mounds, which were used as ceremonial centers.
Pretty amazing. They did all this without air conditioning, too, right?
Yeah.
One of those sites, called the Octagon Earthworks, had been leased to a country club and, until last year, was a golf course.
It's the first time that they haven't been playing golf out here while I was here.
Clint Cassis says it was discouraging to see the land used that way. But this day, he felt differently.
Excited today. Yeah. Excited today. I went and left a little tobacco and said a prayer, and it's a beautiful place. Starting to see some native plants come back, medicinal plants and forage plants. And so it's been a good day.
It's that type of feeling Chief Wallace wants Eastern Shawnee citizens to have, despite being forced off the land long ago.
The past is the past. Let's build upon it and let's be more positive, and we hope to be able to return and have a presence here.
Wallace plans to retire as chief this fall. She hopes the tribe's trips to their homelands will continue. For NPR News, I'm Adriana Martinez-Smiley in Dayton, Ohio.
You can find more of Adriana's reporting on our website at WYSO.org. Up next, Professor Emeritus and author Herbert Woodward Martin, a nationally recognized scholar and performer of the work of Dayton poet Paul Lawrence Dunbar, died on Monday. He was 92 years old. WYSO's Nick Herkman has more on Martin's life.
Herb Martin leaves a powerful legacy as an author, actor, singer, playwright, and librettist. He's described as the preeminent poet of Dayton by local poet David Lee Garrison and among UD's greatest treasures by University of Dayton President Eric Spina. His daughter, Julia Mock, says studying and performing Dunbar brought to life the work of a monumental creator.
inspired him in a way to see what Dunbar had overcome and the work that he had done, and to continue to create himself and explore those challenges and kind of see maybe how some of those challenges are still mirrored, you know, as he was coming up 100 years later, and you know, even recently in the 2000s, those similar challenges of race and societal dynamics.
Martin was born October 4th, 1933, in Birmingham, Alabama. He and his family moved to Toledo when he was 12.
My dad talked about coming when he moved to Toledo and riding a public bus and getting on with a family member. And the family member said, "You don't have to go to the back. You can sit up front." And that, like, even when he said it to me, it was like, wait, what? Like, that, it doesn't feel like, I think for a lot of people, that was as recent as it was.
Martin was a frequent guest on WYSO's Conrad's Corner poetry readings. Here he is reading from his poem, Ballad.
Welcome to Conrad's Corner, where you hear poets and poetry. My name is Herbert Woodward Martin, and I am going to read you Ballad. Waste not all your youth on study, nor give it all to frivolity. I have come some years to 40, take my eyes and see. All that the body's constitution serves, inches closer and closer to the grave, for my generation and their nerves, there is nothing they can save. Take some care for lying in the summer grass, make your house from the hardest stone. Beware, a brick will trip the unsure foot, observe, it can break a bone. Take water, take wine, work the earth, eat bread, feel the warmth in a flame. Every man has but one birth. Find the purest marble and inscribe your name. I am Herb Martin. I have just read to you Ballad, and thanks for listening.
Visitation will be at Thomas Funeral Home from 4 to 6 p.m. on Thursday, July 30th. Followed by an 11 a.m. funeral service on Friday, July 31st, at Holy Angels Catholic Church in Dayton. For WYSO News, I'm Nick Kirkman.
You can find more of Nick's reporting on our website at WYSO.org. Up next on WYSO Weekend, this week on We Outside, Trey Grace takes us to a BIPOC overnight camp where people of all ages are finding joy and belonging in nature.
I was out in the woods with Patty Allen, director of the BIPOC Food and Farming Network, BFFN, for some morel mushroom hunting.
I smell mycelium. I can smell it.
This isn't really something I grew up with as an urban kid from Detroit. Being out here with Patty, I realized this isn't just about mushrooms. It's about connection to the land and slowing down enough to notice what's around you.
When you make yourself still and really engage and connect with nature with all your senses.
I loved that reminder that connection to nature is already in us. And that is part of what led Patty and the BFFN to create something intentional.
And so we knew that there was a disconnect between nature and our youth in urban settings, and we wanted to figure out a way to bring them together. And in a meaningful way, in a very intentional way, through this camp.
And that idea became an intergenerational overnight camp that I had the pleasure of helping to lead. Families, children, elders, all coming together outside. The group did birding in Glen Helen with Nicole Jackson, known as the Black Birder, learned camping skills, and spent time grounding in nature.
I honestly didn't know what I was expecting.
That's camper Crystal Durgens.
I was hoping for some time outside with community and a good experience to have with my son. I was happily surprised by the specific type of community and the healing nature of the camp.
And she told me that one of the moments that stayed with her most was watching her son Ethan at camp.
I was very proud to see that he was able to be so forthcoming about his feelings. So I was proud. I was surprised and proud.
At the beginning of the weekend, at our opening circle, Ethan asked the group for something simple.
He was basically asking for everyone to be kind And he was explaining about some of the differences that he has. And he was just requesting of the community to be kind and to be supportive.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what did you expect?
I expect it's something good. And I did. And it actually made it good.
Awesome. Was there anything that surprised you at the camp?
There's a bird watching place and the camping place where you get to put all the tents.
Yes. And so you camped and you bird watched, and so you learned all kinds of new stuff.
Yes.
Cool.
Seeing more people, you know, my shade, that are also nature lovers, it was just such a wonderful, enlightening moment.
So what would you tell other kids that maybe have not done an overnight camp and are, I don't know, maybe they feel a little nervous about coming?
If you don't try, you're not sure if you can like it or not. Otherwise, you don't know.
What was your favorite part?
The s'mores.
Mine too, Ethan. Mine too. For WYSO, I'm Trey Grace, and we outside.
Hear new episodes of We Outside every Wednesday in July and on this program. And you can catch up on every episode anytime at WYSO.org. We Outside is made possible with the support from Five Rivers Metro Parks and is produced right here at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO. Up next on WYSO Weekend, today from the Ohio Newsroom.
Today from the Ohio Newsroom, Haitians in Lima.
Support comes from Ohio CASA. Ohio CASA's mission is to ensure children experiencing abuse and neglect have a caring, trained adult in their corner. Information about CASA volunteer work is at ohiocasa.org.
I'm Claire Roth. It's not clear exactly when legal protections will end for Haitians and Syrians with temporary protected status, as the fine legal details are hammered out. But the Supreme Court has made clear the Trump administration has near unlimited power to end the program. In the small western Ohio city of Lima, this has left thousands of Haitian immigrants in a state of uncertainty. The Ohio Newsroom's Kendall Crawford reports.
It wasn't easy for Jackson Joseph to leave behind his life as a high school English teacher in Haiti. But he says the gang violence he witnessed left him with no choice but to flee in 2021. Since then, he's worked hard to make Lima feel like home for his family of four.
By living a new life in a new country, I told myself I'm a learner. When I'm fighting, either I learn or I win. I never lose.
Joseph was living legally in Lima under TPS, or Temporary Protected Status. It's a federal designation that allows vetted people from certain countries to live and work legally in the U.S. when it's considered unsafe for them to return home. The Trump administration says conditions have improved in Haiti, so they've revoked the country's TPS status. That means Haitian TPS holders will no longer be permitted to work in the U.S. But Joseph says it's too dangerous to return. His life and responsibilities in Lima remain, but they've become harder to manage.
We do have responsibilities. Take care of our family members, wife and kids and myself, pay the bills, you know, and they reject it. They fired us from our job. Even though you are a good worker or not, they don't care about it because they just rejected the TPS.
For years, immigration support groups in Lima have focused on helping the city's estimated 5,000 Haitian residents connect to jobs, ESL classes, and financial literacy courses. Angelica Bittner, who runs Connecting Borders, a local resettlement organization, says that's shifted. The focus today is helping Haitians get by.
They're already having problems paying rent because of being laid off. And some of them, they're getting, you know, living together and trying to pay the expenses together. And we don't know. We literally go day by day right now.
Bittner says they're focused on finding TPS holders other legal pathways for residency, like asylum. But that process takes years and requires a six-month wait for a work permit.
And that is a very long time to go without a paycheck.
That's Katie Sealshot with the Lima Newcomer Coalition, a community group devoted to assisting Haitian immigrants. She says while Haitians await work permits, local nonprofits and churches are hosting food drives, providing rental assistance, and donating legal funds. But for those who don't qualify or choose not to apply for asylum, Sealshot says they're planning for increased immigration and customs enforcement.
We want to make sure everybody has agency in determining what their future looks like. And if they no longer feel safe here, if it's become too challenging, that there is a plan B.
Sealshot says some Haitian Ohioans are considering immigration to Canada or Chile. And our group is coordinating with Allen County Jobs and Family Services to ensure Haitian children have guardianship if their parents are deported. Haitian Ohioan and pastor Frank Estalus says his people are a blessing, not a burden to Lima.
We come here, we pay taxes, we work, we buy cars, we rent houses. We did everything we could.
Estalus says Haiti is still not safe to return to. So if he were to talk with federal officials...
I'm not going to ask for TPS. I wouldn't ask for residence. I wouldn't ask for any advantage for here. And I would ask you, would you be willing to be with me to change my country?
In the meantime, his congregation will be praying they're not uprooted again. For the Ohio Newsroom, I'm Kendall Crawford in Lima.
That's all today from the Ohio Newsroom. We'll talk with you tomorrow.
You can join us for Today from the Ohio Newsroom at 6:44 a.m. and p.m. weekdays on WYSO. You're listening to WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, and it is always my pleasure to have an in-studio guest. This time around, it is Sarah Nilsson. And Sarah, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. So I was about to call you a business support specialist, but I noticed the signature on your emails say business and community partnerships. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so think of it as like community outreach. My job is really being out among the community leaders, being among business leaders, and really just developing relationships with them, having conversations about WYSO's mission in our community and what that means and what that looks like. And then if the business is interested in promoting their brand with WYSO, then I help them with underwriting campaigns, or if they're interested in sponsoring an event, I help them with sponsorships.
That's right. So there are a number of ways that local businesses can become involved in supporting WYSO, and hopefully that leads to greater support for them from our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives them really great exposure to our listeners. We have a real dedicated audience and listeners, and so it's an opportunity for any business or organization to really gain that exposure with our dedicated and loyal audience.
Support for WYSO is something that we absolutely do not take for granted, but clearly there is a lot of support for WYSO given our move to the Union Schoolhouse and the number of sponsors stepping up to support and get behind WYSO events. What are you finding as you have conversations with our local partners?
I find in having these conversations with business leaders that they really understand and value what we're doing for the community and the services that we provide. I think that there's a real special value for the storytelling that we bring to the Miami Valley, and it really connects people and it connects the local businesses. I mean, You know, most of our business partners that we collaborate with, they're small business owners, right? They're up against a lot of challenges and economy and, you know, big corporate entities. So to have a platform like WYSO for these small business owners, I think that brings a real strong value.
A lot of your job revolves around community. Let's talk about the community you grew up in. Are you a Dayton native, Ohio native?
I am an Ohio native. I did not grow up in Dayton. I actually moved to the area when I decided to go to college at Wright State University. And so I would visit Yellow Springs regularly and loved the area. And then I moved out of state.
Okay.
Moved to a couple of different states like California and Florida, and then found my way back to Ohio.
A lot of people come back to Ohio.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, lesson learned, never say never. But I love it. I love Yellow Springs. I love this area. I mean, I always looked at Dayton as like the underdog city compared to the other three C's. So it has a real special place in my heart.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about family, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. I have a 16-year-old son who knows everything and a supportive husband, and we live here in Yellow Springs. We've lived in the village for over a decade, and it's been wonderful, and we feel very blessed to live here.
You and I tend to huddle over in corners at WYSO events and like to share a few laughs. So not only WYSO events, but are you big into the music scene here in Dayton?
Jerry, this is like, I have such a dream job, right? I get to go to all the community events. I get to hang out with super cool, fun, and funny people like you. And music is one of the things that I've just always loved. So any chance I get to pull up, I mean, I'm going to try to be there at the event.
Yeah, the music scene is part of why people come back to Dayton. There's a lot going on culturally.
Yeah, there really is. I mean, like the stuff that the Levitt Pavilion is doing, I mean, it's just incredible. The musicians that come through, the performers that come through. I mean, it's such a beautiful moment to be able to be sitting out on the grass with your blanket spread out and, you know, your cooler full of whatever beverage you prefer, and to just sit out under the sky and listen to performers and hang out with locals and people that you know. I mean, there's something real special about that.
Yeah. Anything else you want to tell our listeners about home life, hobbies, anything else you're interested in?
Yeah, I have interest in home projects. We're doing a lot of home renovations, so I have a real strong interest in putting my husband on certain home projects.
And how's he responding?
Well, it's a work in progress.
That's great. Sarah Nilsson, it's been a lot of fun to talk to you. As always, thanks for sharing some time with us during WYSO Weekend.
Thank you so much, Jerry. It's a pleasure.
Up next on WYSO Weekend, let's check out Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. Spanish moss hangs eerily from cypress trees rising from the black water of a Louisiana bayou. The water ripples where a slender form glides just beneath the surface. At first glance, it appears to be a snake. But look closer, and you just might see a long, narrow spike of a beak at the tip of a slender neck. It's a snake bird, a colloquial name for the anhinga, swimming with just its head and neck above the water. Anhingas belong to a small group of birds called the darters, and they look a bit like cormorants. When hunting fish, an anhinga hangs motionless in the water or swims slowly just below the surface, its neck crooked, almost like a cobra's. The anhinga has specialized muscles and a hinge in its neck. And when an unwary fish swims close, the bird's head darts forward, impaling its prey. Backward slanted serrations keep the fish from slipping off. Surfacing with its beak held just slightly open, the bird flicks the fish upward and catches it in midair. Then it downs it head first. And once again, the anhinga glides through the black water. As always, you'll find photos and videos on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
BirdNote tells vivid, sound-rich stories about birds and the challenges they face. They say their mission is to inspire listeners to care about the natural world and take steps to protect it. As listeners tune into the lives of birds, their connection with nature deepens. They become champions for conservation and stewards of places important to birds and people. That from the people at BirdNote. Putting a wrap on this edition of Why So Weekend on WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks so much for joining us. This program is available as a podcast wherever you download and subscribe to your podcast. We've got more conversations, highlights, and features for you next weekend. Please join us then. Thank you.